Extended practices. Solitude. The Buddha was surrounded by thousands of monks. He walked, he sat, he ate among the monks and the nuns, but he always dwelled in his silence. There's a Buddhist text called Sutra on Knowing the Better Way of Living Alone. Living alone does not mean that there's no one around us. Living alone means that we are established firmly in the here and the now, and we are aware of everything that is happening in the present moment. You use your mindfulness to become aware of every feeling, of every perception in yourself, and of what is happening around you. And you are always with yourself. You don't lose yourself. That is the ideal way of living a life of solitude. That is the Buddha's definition of the ideal practice of solitude. Not to be caught in the past, not to be carried away by the future or by the crowd, but to always be there, body and mind united, becoming aware of what is happening in the present moment. Without the capacity for being alone, we become poorer and poorer. We don't have enough nourishment for ourselves, and we don't have much to offer others. Learning to live in solitude is very important. Each day we should devote some time to being physically alone, because then it's easier to practice nourishing ourselves and looking deeply. Solitude is not about being alone high up in the mountains or in a hut deep in the forest. It's not about hiding ourselves away from civilization. Real solitude comes from a stable heart that does not get carried away by the crowd or our sorrows about the past, our worries about the future, or our excitement about the present. We do not lose ourselves. We do not lose our mindfulness. To take refuge in our mindful breathing, to come back to the present moment, is to take refuge in the beautiful, serene island within each of us. That doesn't mean it's impossible to practice being alone and looking deeply when we're with a crowd of people. It is possible. Even if we're in a marketplace, we can be alone and not be carried away by the crowd. We are still ourselves. We are still ourselves even if we are in a group discussion and there is collective emotion. We still dwell safely and solidly in our own island. Practice. The first step is to be physically alone. The second step is to be yourself and to live in solitude, even when in a group. Living in solitude doesn't mean you cut yourself off from others. It's because you're in solitude that you can be in communion with the world. I feel connected to you because I am fully myself. It's so simple. To really relate to the world, you have to first go back and relate to yourself. Practice sitting meditation, walking, meals, and working with others, but always come back to your own island as well. Enjoy being together with your family and friends without getting caught and lost in the group emotions and perceptions. Your community, your Sangha, is your support. When you see someone in your community acting in mindfulness, speaking with love and enjoying her work, she is your reminder to return to your own source of mindfulness and return to solitude. When you enjoy your time with the people and friends around you and you don't feel lost in your interactions with others, then even in the midst of society, you can smile and breathe in peace, dwelling in the island of self. Silence. Silence is something that comes from our own hearts and not from someone outside. If we are truly silent, then no matter what situation we find ourselves in, we can enjoy the silence. Silence does not only mean not talking and not doing loud things. Silence means that we're not disturbed inside. There's no talking inside. There are moments when we think that we are silent and that all around is silent, but there's talking going on all the time inside our head. That's not silence. The practice is not creating silence outside of our activities, but creating silence within them. Eating with others in a Sangha or family is an opportunity to enjoy silence. Sitting and walking meditation are opportunities for silence, as is listening to a Dharma talk, a Buddhist teacher talking about the Buddha's teachings. When we are silent inside, awareness can penetrate into the soil of our souls. Practice. At retreats in the Plum Village practice centers, a period of deep silence is observed starting from the end of the evening sitting meditation until after breakfast the following morning. Allow the silence and the calmness to penetrate your flesh and bones. Allow the energy of the Sangha and its mindfulness to penetrate your body and mind. Return to your sleeping space slowly, aware of every step. Breathe deeply and enjoy the stillness and the freshness. Even if there is a person walking by your side, maintain your silence. This person needs your support too. You can stay alone outside with the trees and the stars, then go inside, use the bathroom, change your clothes, and go to bed right away. Lying on your back, you can practice deep relaxation until sleep comes. In the morning, move mindfully and silently to the bathroom, taking time to breathe, and then proceed right away to the meditation hall. You do not have to wait for anyone. When you see someone along the path, just join your palms and bow, allowing him to enjoy the morning the way you do. Lazy day. Many of us are overscheduled. Even our children are overscheduled. We think keeping busy will satisfy us. But our constant busyness is one of the reasons we suffer from stress and depression. We have pushed ourselves to work too hard, and we have pushed our children to work too hard. This is not a civilization. We have to change the situation. A lazy day is a day for us to be without any scheduled activities. We just let the day unfold naturally, timelessly. We may do walking meditation on our own or with a friend, or do sitting meditation in the forest. We might like to read lightly or write home to our family or to a friend. It can be a day for us to look more deeply at our practice and at our relations with others. We may learn a lot about how we have been practicing. We may recognize what to do or not to do in order to bring more harmony into our practice. Sometimes we may force ourselves too much in the practice, creating disharmony within and around us. On this day, we have a chance to balance ourselves. We may recognize that we may simply need to rest, or that we should practice more diligently. It is a very quiet day for everyone. When we do not have something to do, we get bored and seek for something to do or for entertainment. We are very afraid of being there and doing nothing. The lazy day has been prescribed for us to train ourselves not to be afraid of doing nothing. Otherwise, we have no means to confront our stress and depression. It is only when we get bored and become aware that we are seeking entertainment to hide the feelings of loneliness and worthlessness in ourselves that the tension, the depression, the stress begin to dissolve. We can arrange our daily lives so we have opportunities to learn being peace, being joy, being loving, and being compassionate. Practice. A lazy day isn't a day when you can just do what you like. On most days, you have so many things to do for other people, daily things, and there are things you would very much like to do for yourself. But that is not the lazy day. Lazy day is a day when you refrain from doing anything. You resist doing things. Because you are used to always doing something, it has become a bad habit. The lazy day is a kind of drastic measure against that kind of habit energy. On lazy days, you do your best to refrain from doing something. Try to do nothing. It's hard. It's hard, but you can learn a new way of being. You think that when you're not doing anything, you're wasting your time. That's not true. Your time is, first of all, for you to be alive, to be peace, to be joy, and to be loving. The world needs joyous and loving people who are capable of just being without doing. If you know the art of being peace, of being solid, then you have the ground for every action. The ground for action is to be, and the quality of being determines the quality of doing, and action must be based on non-action. We usually say, don't just sit there, do something. But we have to reverse that statement to say, don't just do something, sit there. in order to be in such a way that peace, understanding, and compassion are possible. Listening to a Dharma talk. The teachings of the Buddha are called the Dharma. If you attend a retreat at a practice center, or if you go to a sitting group or class in your neighborhood that is led by a lay Dharma teacher, you will have the opportunity to hear a Dharma talk. Practice. Arrive early for the talk so that you may have enough time to find a seat and establish yourself in a peaceful state of mind. Listen to the talks with an open mind and a receptive heart. If you listen only with your intellect, comparing and judging what is said to what you already think you know or what you have heard others say, you may miss the chance to truly receive the message that is being transmitted. The Dharma is like rain. Let it penetrate deeply into your consciousness, watering the seeds of wisdom and compassion that are already there. Absorb the talk openly, like the earth receiving a refreshing spring rain. The talk might be just the condition our tree needs to flower and bear the fruits of understanding and love. Out of respect for the teachings and the teacher, you are asked to sit on a chair or a cushion during the teachings and not to lie down. If you feel tired during the talk, mindfully shift your position and practice deep breathing and gentle massage for 1 or 2 minutes to bring fresh oxygen to your brain and the areas of fatigue in your body. Refrain from talking or making disturbing noises during the Dharma talk. If it is absolutely necessary to leave during the talk, please do so with a minimum of disturbance to others. Dharma discussion. Dharma discussion is an opportunity to benefit from each other's insights and experience of the practice. It is a special time for us to share our experiences, our joys, our difficulties, and our questions relating to the practice of mindfulness. By practicing deep listening while others are speaking, we help create a calm and receptive environment. By learning to speak out about our happiness and our difficulties in the practice, we contribute to the collective insight and understanding of the group. Practice. Base your sharing only on your own experience of the practice rather than about abstract ideas and theoretical topics. Many of us share similar difficulties and aspirations. Sitting, listening, and sharing together, you recognize your true connections to others. One person shares at a time. While that person is speaking, everyone follows their breathing and listens deeply without judging or reacting, and without making crosstalk or offering advice. Remember that whatever is shared during the Dharma discussion time is confidential. If a friend shares about a difficulty she is facing, respect that she may or may not wish to talk about this outside of the Dharma discussion time. Discussing the Dharma in the ultimate dimension, we look at each other and smile. You are me, don't you see? Speaking and listening, we are one. Touching the Earth. The practice of touching the earth, also known as bowing deeply or prostrating, helps us return to the earth and to our roots and to recognize that we are not alone, but connected to a whole stream of spiritual and blood ancestors. We touch the earth to let go of the idea that we are separate, and to remind us that we are the earth and part of life. When we touch the earth, we become small, with the humility and simplicity of a young child. When we touch the earth, we become great, like an ancient tree sending her roots deep into the earth, drinking from the source of all waters. When we touch the earth, we breathe in all the strength and stability of the earth, and breathe out our suffering, our feelings of anger, hatred, fear, inadequacy, and grief. Practice. To begin this practice, join your palms in front of your chest in the shape of a lotus bud. Then gently lower yourself to the ground so that your shins, forearms, and forehead are resting comfortably on the floor. While touching the earth, turn your palms face up, showing your openness to the three jewels, the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Breathe in all the strength and stability of the earth, and breathe out to release your clinging to any suffering. after one or two times of practicing touching the earth, you can already release a lot of your suffering and feeling of alienation and reconcile with your ancestors, parents, children, or friends. Touching the earth is a practice that is helpful to do with your Sangha. When you are with a Sangha, one person can be the bell master and invite the bell between prostrations. This same person can read the 5 earth touchings aloud while everyone prostrates. If you practice touching the earth on your own, you can make a recording of yourself reading the text, or do it from memory. The 5 Earth Touchings. In gratitude, I bow to all generations of ancestors in my blood family. I see my mother and father, whose blood, flesh, and vitality are circulating in my own veins and nourishing every cell in me. Through them, I see my 4 grandparents. I carry in me the life, blood, experience, wisdom, happiness, and sorrow of all generations. I open my heart, flesh, and bones to receive the energy of insight, love, and experience transmitted to me by my ancestors. I know that parents always love and support their children and grandchildren, although they are not always able to express it skillfully because of difficulties they encounter. As a continuation of my ancestors, I allow their energy to flow through me and ask for their support, protection, and strength. In gratitude, I bow to all generations of ancestors in my spiritual family. I see in myself my teachers, the ones who show me the way of love and understanding, the way to breathe, smile, forgive, and live deeply in the present moment. I open my heart and my body to receive the energy of understanding, loving-kindness, and protection from the awakened ones, their teachings, and the community of practice over many generations. I vow to practice to transform the suffering in myself and the world, and to transmit their energy to future generations of practitioners. In gratitude, I bow to this land and all of the ancestors who made it available. I see that I am whole, protected, and nourished by this land and all of the living beings that have been here and made life worthwhile and possible for me through all their efforts. I see myself touching my ancestors of Native American origin, who have lived on this land for such a long time, and know the ways to live in peace and harmony with nature, protecting the mountains, forests, animals, vegetation, and minerals of this land. I feel the energy of this land penetrating my body and soul, supporting and accepting me. I vow to contribute my part in transforming the violence, hatred, and delusion that still lie deep in the consciousness of this society, so that future generations will have more safety, joy, and peace. I ask this land for its protection and support. In gratitude and compassion, I bow down and transmit my energy to those I love. All the energy I have received, I now want to transmit to my father, my mother, everyone I love, and all who have suffered and worried because of me and for my sake. I want all of them to be healthy and joyful. I pray that all ancestors in my blood and spiritual families will focus their energies toward each of them, to protect and support them. I am one with those I love. In understanding and compassion, I bow down to reconcile myself with all those who have made me suffer. I open my heart and send forth my energy of love and understanding to everyone who has made me suffer, to those who have destroyed much of my life and the lives of those I love. I know now that these people have themselves undergone a lot of suffering, and that their hearts are overloaded with pain, anger, and hatred. I pray that they can be transformed to experience the joy of living, so that they will not continue to make themselves and others suffer. I see their suffering, and do not want to hold any feelings of hatred or anger in myself toward them. I do not want them to suffer. I channel my energy of love and understanding to them, and ask all my ancestors to help them. Traveling and returning home. We are used to traveling a lot. Even when we go on a vacation or come to a practice center or another place of rest, we are already often planning our day trips or escapes. At Plum Village, we refrain from traveling into town as much as we can. Our time spent here at the practice center is very precious. There are many nurturing elements of peace and happiness here, such as the beautiful trees and forests, the birds, our brothers and sisters who have come from all walks of life to practice like us. The collective energy of the Sangha is the most precious thing. We spend our time devoted to the practice. Often, once people have found a place where they can relax or have made a home at one of the practice centers, they feel sad when the time comes to leave. But there is no coming and no going, for we are always with you, and you with us. When you go home, remember to return to your breathing. You will know that the friends at Plum Village and our Sangha body all over the world are breathing too. Practice. On the day that you are traveling, or are leaving to go on a trip, invite a bell 15 minutes before the departure time. Allow yourself enough time for preparation so you won't have to rush. Begin heading toward the bus, car, or van, so that you will not be late and keep the others waiting. Walk mindfully, and enter a car that has an empty seat. Sit up straight and follow your breathing. You might like to observe the surrounding countryside. Refrain from being carried away by conversations. Continue your practice as you return to your home, your family, and society. As you have learned to live in harmony with the Sangha and Plum Village, you can also cultivate harmony in your family and in society. As you have learned to understand and appreciate your friends in the practice, you can also learn to understand and appreciate your co-workers and your neighbors. You can practice loving speech with strangers on the city bus, just as you do with the sisters and brothers at Plum Village. Mindfulness practice is everywhere you go. Anywhere, anytime you like, you can take refuge in the practices of conscious breathing, mindful eating, loving speech, deep listening, and many other wonderful practices. When you do, you will feel very connected and not alone. You become as large as the whole community, the whole Sangha body. Metta, love meditation. To love is, first of all, to accept ourselves as we actually are. That is why, in this love meditation, knowing thyself is the first practice of love. When we practice this, we see the conditions that have caused us to be the way we are. This makes it easy for us to accept ourselves, including our suffering and our happiness at the same time. One day, King Prasenajit of Kosala asked Queen Malika, "My dear wife, is there anyone who loves you as much as you love yourself?" The queen laughed and responded, "My dear husband, is there anyone who loves you more than you love yourself?" The next day, they told the Buddha of their conversation, and he said, "You are correct. There is no one in the universe more dear to us than ourselves. The mind may travel in 1,000 directions, but it will find no one else more beloved. The moment you see how important it is to love yourself, you will stop making others suffer." Metta means loving kindness. We begin this with an aspiration. May I be. Then we transcend the level of aspiration and look deeply at all the positive and negative characteristics of the object of our meditation, in this case ourselves. The willingness to love is not yet love. We look deeply with all our being in order to understand. We don't just repeat the words or imitate others or strive after some ideal. The practice of love meditation is not auto-suggestion. We don't just say, "I love myself, I love all beings." We look deeply at our body, our feelings, our perceptions, our mental formations, and our consciousness. And in just a few weeks, our aspiration to love will become a deep intention. Love will enter our thoughts, our words, and our actions, and we will notice that we have become peaceful, happy, and light in body and spirit, safe and free from injury, and free from anger, afflictions, fear, and anxiety. When we practice, we observe how much peace, happiness, and lightness we already have. We notice whether we are anxious about accidents or misfortunes, and how much anger, irritation, fear, anxiety, or worry are already in us. As we become aware of the feelings in us, our self-understanding will deepen. We will see how our fears and lack of peace contribute to our unhappiness, and we will see the value of loving ourselves and cultivating a heart of compassion. In this love meditation, anger, afflictions, fear, and anxiety refer to all the unwholesome negative states of mind that dwell in us and rob us of our peace and happiness. Anger, fear, anxiety, craving, greed, and ignorance are the great afflictions of our time. By practicing mindful living, we are able to deal with them, and our love is translated into effective action. Practice. This is a love meditation adapted from the Visuddhimagga, the Path of Purification, by Buddhaghosa, a 5th century CE systemization of the Buddha's teachings. To practice this love meditation, sit still, calm your body and your breathing, and recite it to yourself. The sitting position is a wonderful position for practicing this. Sitting still, you are not too preoccupied with other matters, so you can look deeply at yourself as you are, cultivate your love for yourself, and determine the best ways to express this love in the world. May I be peaceful, happy, and light in body and spirit. May she be peaceful, happy, and light in body and spirit. May he be peaceful, happy, and light in body and spirit. May they be peaceful, happy, and light in body and spirit. May I be safe and free from injury. May she be safe and free from injury. May he be safe and free from injury. May they be safe and free from injury. May I be free from anger, afflictions, fear, and anxiety. May she be free from anger, afflictions, fear, and anxiety. May he be free from anger, afflictions, fear, and anxiety. May they be free from anger, afflictions, fear, and anxiety. Begin practicing this love meditation on yourself, I. Until you are able to love and take care of yourself, you cannot be of much help to others. After that, practice on others, he, she, they. First on someone you like, then on someone neutral to you, then on someone you love, and finally on someone the mere thought of whom makes you suffer. According to the Buddha, a human being is made of 5 elements called skandhas in Sanskrit. These skandhas are form, feelings, perceptions, mental formations, and consciousness. In a way, you are the surveyor, and these elements are your territory. To know the real situation within yourself, you have to know your own territory, including the elements within you that are at war with each other. In order to bring about harmony, reconciliation, and healing within, you have to understand yourself. Looking and listening deeply, surveying your territory, is the beginning of love meditation. Begin this practice by looking deeply into the skandha of form, that is, your body. Ask, how is my body in this moment? How was it in the past? How will it be in the future? Later, when you meditate on someone you like, someone neutral to you, someone you love, and someone you hate, you also begin by looking at his physical aspects. Breathing in and out, visualize his face, his way of walking, sitting and talking, his heart, lungs, kidneys, and all the organs in his body, taking as much time as you need to bring these details into awareness, but always start with yourself. When you see your own 5 skandhas clearly, understanding and love arise naturally, and you know what to do and what not to do. Look into your body to see whether it is at peace or suffering from illness. Look at the condition of your lungs, your heart, your intestines, your kidneys, and your liver to see what the real needs of your body are. When you do, you will eat, drink, and act in ways that demonstrate your love and your compassion for your body. Usually you follow ingrained habits, but when you look deeply, you see that many of these habits harm your body and mind. So you work to transform your habits in ways conducive to good health and vitality. Next, observe your feelings, whether they are pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Feelings flow in us like a river, and each feeling is a drop of water in that river. Look into the river of your feelings and see how each feeling came to be. See what has been preventing you from being happy, and do your best to transform those things. Practice touching the wondrous, refreshing, and healing elements that are already in you and in the world. Doing so, you become stronger and better able to love yourself and others. Then meditate on your perceptions. The Buddha observed, "The person who suffers most in this world is the person who has many wrong perceptions, and most of our perceptions are erroneous. You see a snake in the dark and you panic, but when your friend shines a light on it, you see that it is only a rope. You have to know which wrong perceptions cause us to suffer. Please write beautifully the sentence, 'Are you sure?' on a piece of paper and tape it to your wall. Love meditation helps you learn to look with clarity and serenity in order to improve the way you perceive. Next, observe your mental formations, the ideas and tendencies within you that lead you to speak and act as you do. Practice looking deeply to discover the true nature of your mental formations, how you are influenced by your individual consciousness, and also by the collective consciousness of your family, ancestors, and society. Unwholesome mental formations cause so much disturbance. Wholesome mental formations bring about love, happiness, and liberation. Finally, look at your consciousness. According to Buddhism, consciousness is like a field with every possible kind of seed in it. Seeds of love, compassion, joy, and equanimity. Seeds of anger, fear, and anxiety. And seeds of mindfulness. Consciousness is the storehouse that contains all these seeds, all the possibilities of what might arise in your mind. When your mind is not at peace, it may be because of the desires and feelings in your store consciousness. To live in peace, you have to be aware of your tendencies, your habit energies, so you can exercise some self-control. This is the practice of preventative health care. Look deeply into the nature of your feelings to find their roots, to see which feelings need to be transformed, and nourish those feelings that bring about peace, joy, and well-being. Unilateral disarmament. What can we do when we're aware we've done something that causes others to be unhappy? The people we make suffer may still be alive. The people we have made suffer may have already died. What can we do to make amends? The wound is not only in the body, in the soul, in the consciousness of the other person, but the wound is there in ourselves. Suppose we said something unkind to our grandmother 50 years ago. The pain, the suffering is still there in our consciousness, in our soul. I know that my grandmother is alive in me with her wound. I am alive also with that same kind of wound. Practicing unilateral disarmament means we disarm ourselves regardless of what the other person does and regardless of whether the other person is alive or not. We don't need the other person to be there in order to heal ourselves. We don't need them to sit in front of us in order for us to be reconciled with them. Reconciliation and healing can be realized within oneself alone, and disarmament can be done unilaterally. If we disarm ourselves, if we become peaceful, if we decide not to attack and not to argue, we already have peace inside us. When even one person practices unilateral disarmament, it will already have an effect on the other person. Practice. When you are aware of a wound, begin to breathe in and out and begin to be aware of the wound. For example, breathing in, I am aware of the wound in me. Breathing out, I am taking good care of it. Breathing in, I say, "I'm sorry, Grandma." Breathing out, I know I will not do it again. When you practice like that, you make your grandmother in you smile, and the healing begins to take place. The moment you disarm yourself, the moment you decide to give up the fight, the moment you practice beginning anew in yourself, the healing begins, and you undergo a transformation that will very soon have an effect on the other person. She will see the difference in you. And now you are looking at her in a different way. You are smiling at her in a very different way. You are now a flower, and no longer a thorn for her. Very soon she will notice this, and it will be her turn to disarm and transform. Peace begins with me. Reconciliation begins with me. Healing begins with me. So when you practice deep breathing and smiling to the pain in you, and vow to begin anew, when you practice loving kindness, taking care of your pain and suffering, you are already practicing taking care of the other person. Taking care of yourself is to take care of the other person. For example, suppose you write a letter of reconciliation after 10 years of separation from someone. If your letter is sincere, you'll begin to feel much better right away, just during the time of writing. You haven't yet put the letter into the envelope. You haven't put the stamp on. You haven't sent it to the post office. The other person has not yet received it. But you feel very good right now. You have reconciled already with yourself, and your health begins to improve right away. That person would need 3 or 5 days to receive the letter and telephone you to thank you, but that is only one of the effects, not the only one. Talking to your inner child. Many of us have a wounded child within us. We've been deeply wounded as children, making it hard for us to trust and love, and to allow love from others to reach us. Making time to go back to this wounded child is a very important practice. But there can be an obstacle. Many of us know that we have a wounded child within us, but we are afraid to go back to ourselves and be with that child. The block of pain and sorrow in us is so huge and overwhelming that we run away from it. But we need to go home and take care of our wounded child, even though this is difficult. We need instructions on how to do this so that the pain inside does not overwhelm us. Practice. The practices of mindful walking, mindful sitting, and mindful breathing are crucial. Also, your friend's energy of mindfulness can help. The first time you go home to the wounded child, you may need 1 or 2 friends, especially those who have been successful in the practice, sitting next to you, to lend their support, mindfulness, and energy. When a friend sits close to you and holds your hand, you combine his or her energy with your own, and so may feel safer to go home and embrace your wounded child within. When you sit or walk mindfully, talk to your wounded child within. Embrace that child with the energy of mindfulness. You can say, "Darling, I am here for you. I will take good care of you. I know that you suffer so much. I have been so busy and neglectful of you, and now I have learned a way to come back to you." You have to talk to your child several times a day. Only then can healing take place. The little child has been left alone for so long. That is why you have to begin the practice right away. Embracing your child tenderly, you reassure him that you will never let him down again or leave him unattended. If you have a loving Sangha, then your practice will be easier. To practice alone, without the support of brothers and sisters, is more difficult. Taking refuge in the Sangha and having brothers and sisters to assist you, give advice, and support you in difficult moments is very important. Your wounded child may represent several generations. Maybe your parents and grandparents had the same problem. They also had a wounded child within that they didn't know how to handle, so they transmitted their wounded child to you. Our practice is to end this vicious cycle. If you can heal your wounded child, you will liberate the person who abused you. That person may also have been the victim of abuse. If you generate the energy of mindfulness, understanding, and compassion for your wounded child, you will suffer much less. People suffer because they have not been touched by compassion and understanding. When you generate mindfulness, compassion and understanding become possible. Then you can allow people to love you. Before, you were suspicious of everything and everyone. Compassion helps you relate to others and restore communication. The 14 Mindfulness Trainings. The 14 mindfulness trainings of the Order of Interbeing are a modern version of the 58 Bodhisattva precepts set out in the Brahmajala Sutra, Sutra of the Net of Indra. The 14 mindfulness trainings are mindfulness in our real lives, and not just the teaching of ideas. If we practice these trainings deeply, we will recognize that each of them contains all the others. Studying and practicing the mindfulness trainings can help us understand the true nature of interbeing. We cannot just be by ourselves alone. We can only interbe with everyone and everything else. To practice these trainings is to become aware of what is going on in our bodies, our minds, and the world. With awareness, we can live our lives happily, fully present in each moment we are alive, intelligently seeking solutions to the problems we face, and working for peace in small and large ways. When we practice the 5 mindfulness trainings deeply, described in the daily practice section, we are already practicing the 14. If we want to formally receive the 14 mindfulness trainings and enter the core community of the Order of Interbeing, it is because we wish to become a community leader, to organize the practice in a sangha. Only when we have the feeling that we have enough time, energy, and interest to take care of a community should we ask for formal ordination. Then we will be working together with other brothers and sisters. Otherwise, the 5 mindfulness trainings are enough. We can practice the 14 mindfulness trainings without a formal ceremony, without being ordained as a member of the order. We can also modify a few words if we like, so it applies to our own tradition. Practice. The first mindfulness training. Openness. Aware of the suffering created by fanaticism and intolerance, we are determined not to be idolatrous about or bound to any doctrine, theory, or ideology, even Buddhist ones. Buddhist teachings are guiding means to help us learn to look deeply and to develop our understanding and compassion. They are not doctrines to fight, kill, or die for. The second mindfulness training, non-attachment to views. Aware of the suffering created by attachment to views and wrong perceptions, we are determined to avoid being narrow-minded and bound to present views. We shall learn and practice non-attachment from views in order to be open to others' insights and experiences. We are aware that the knowledge we presently possess is not changeless absolute truth. Truth is found in life, and we will observe life within and around us in every moment, ready to learn throughout our lives. The third mindfulness training, freedom of thought. Aware of the suffering brought about when we impose our views on others, we are committed not to force others, even our children, by any means whatsoever, such as authority, threat, money, propaganda, or indoctrination, to adopt our views. We will respect the right of others to be different and to choose what to believe and how to decide. We will, however, help others renounce fanaticism and narrowness through compassionate dialogue. The fourth mindfulness training, awareness of suffering. Aware that looking deeply at the nature of suffering can help us develop compassion and find ways out of suffering, we are determined not to avoid or close our eyes before suffering. We are committed to finding ways, including personal contact, images, and sounds, to be with those who suffer, so we can understand their situation deeply and help them transform their suffering into compassion, peace, and joy. The fifth mindfulness training, simple, healthy living. Aware that true happiness is rooted in peace, solidity, freedom, and compassion, and not in wealth or fame, we are determined not to take as the aim of our life fame, profit, wealth, or sensual pleasure, nor to accumulate wealth while millions are hungry and dying. We are committed to living simply and sharing our time, energy, and material resources with those in need. We will practice mindful consuming, not using alcohol, drugs, or any other products that bring toxins into our own and the collective body and consciousness. The sixth mindfulness training, dealing with anger. Aware that anger blocks communication and creates suffering, we are determined to take care of the energy of anger when it arises and to recognize and transform the seeds of anger that lie deep in our consciousness. When anger comes up, we are determined not to do or say anything, but to practice mindful breathing or mindful walking and acknowledge, embrace, and look deeply into our anger. We will learn to look with the eyes of compassion at those we think are the cause of our anger. The seventh mindfulness training, dwelling happily in the present moment. Aware that life is available only in the present moment, and that it is possible to live happily in the here and now, we are committed to training ourselves to live deeply each moment of daily life. We will try not to lose ourselves in dispersion or be carried away by regrets about the past, worries about the future, or craving, anger, or jealousy in the present. We will practice mindful breathing to come back to what is happening in the present moment. We are determined to learn the art of mindful living by touching the wondrous, refreshing, and healing elements that are inside and around us, and by nourishing seeds of joy, peace, love, and understanding in ourselves, thus facilitating the work of transformation and healing in our consciousness. The eighth mindfulness training, community and communication. Aware that lack of communication always brings separation and suffering, we are committed to training ourselves in the practice of compassionate listening and loving speech. We will learn to listen deeply, without judging or reacting, and refrain from uttering words that can create discord or cause the community to break. We will make every effort to keep communications open and to reconcile and resolve all conflicts, however small. The ninth mindfulness training, truthful and loving speech. Aware that words can create suffering or happiness, we are committed to learning to speak truthfully and constructively, using only words that inspire hope and confidence. We are determined not to say untruthful things for the sake of personal interest or to impress people, nor to utter words that might cause division or hatred. We will not spread news that we do not know to be certain, nor criticize or condemn things of which we are not sure. We will do our best to speak out about situations of injustice, even when doing so may threaten our safety. The tenth mindfulness training, protecting the Sangha. Aware that the essence and aim of a Sangha is the practice of understanding and compassion, we are determined not to use the Buddhist community for personal gain or profit, or transform our community into a political instrument. A spiritual community should, however, take a clear stand against oppression and injustice, and should strive to change the situation without engaging in partisan conflicts. The 11th mindfulness training, right livelihood. Aware that great violence and injustice have been done to our environment and society, we are committed not to live with a vocation that is harmful to humans and nature. We will do our best to select a livelihood that helps realize our ideal of understanding and compassion. Aware of global, economic, political, and social realities, we will behave responsibly as consumers and as citizens, not investing in companies that deprive others of their chance to live. The 12th mindfulness training, reverence for life. Aware that much suffering is caused by war and conflict, we are determined to cultivate nonviolence, understanding, and compassion in our daily lives, to promote peace education, mindful mediation, and reconciliation within families, communities, nations, and in the world. We are determined not to kill and not to let others kill. We will diligently practice deep looking with our Sangha to discover better ways to protect life and prevent war. The 13th mindfulness training, generosity. Aware of the suffering caused by exploitation, social injustice, stealing, and oppression, we are committed to cultivating loving kindness and learning ways to work for the well-being of people, animals, plants, and minerals. We will practice generosity by sharing our time, energy, and material resources with those who are in need. We are determined not to steal and not to possess anything that should belong to others. We will respect the property of others, but will try to prevent others from profiting from human suffering or the suffering of other beings. The 14th mindfulness training, right conduct for lay people. Aware that sexual relations motivated by craving cannot dissipate the feeling of loneliness, but will create more suffering, frustration, and isolation. We are determined not to engage in sexual relations without mutual understanding, love, and a long-term commitment. In sexual relations, we must be aware of future suffering that may be caused. We know that to preserve the happiness of ourselves and others, we must respect the rights and commitments of ourselves and others. We will do everything in our power to protect children from sexual abuse and to protect couples and families from being broken by sexual misconduct. We will treat our bodies with respect and preserve our vital energies, sexual, breath, spirit, for the realization of our bodhisattva ideal. We will be fully aware of the responsibility of bringing new lives into the world and will meditate on the world into which we are bringing new beings. For monastics, aware that the aspiration of a monk or a nun can only be realized when he or she wholly leaves behind the bonds of worldly love, we are committed to practicing chastity and to helping others protect themselves. We are aware that loneliness and suffering cannot be alleviated by the coming together of two bodies in a sexual relationship, but by the practice of true understanding and compassion. We know that a sexual relationship will destroy our life as a monk or a nun, will prevent us from realizing our ideal of serving living beings, and will harm others. We are determined not to suppress or mistreat our body, or to look upon our body as only an instrument, but to learn to handle our body with respect. We are determined to preserve vital energies, sexual, breath, spirit, for the realization of our bodhisattva ideal.
This audiobook is continued on Disc 4.